The great Mughal Shahanshah, Muhyiddin Muhammad Aurangzeb Alamgir, had died in 1707, after a long reign of 52 years. The empire had hit its peak under him, but now he was dead, and his sons, old and untrained, had to pick up the sword for their claim to the empire. However, the fate of the empire had been decided. Aurangzeb himself had sealed it. The sun was setting on the great Timurid house once and for all. North India was about to be up for grabs. This video is sponsored by Magellan TV. Magellan TV is a streaming service that hosts over 3,000 documentaries and shows in various genres, from history to science, as well as travel and art. They're adding new shows all the time, which you can enjoy on all sorts of devices. Also, best of all, there are no ads, and an increasing percentage of shows is available in 4K with no additional cost. They were kind enough to offer Al Muqaddimah viewers an extended free month-long trial. You can go to try.magellantv.com/Al Muqaddimah to take advantage of that. Since you're watching a history channel, you might also like many of the historical documentaries that they have. I would recommend The Story of Egypt. It is a four-part docu-series that tells the incredible story of one of the ancient world's most remarkable civilizations. Speaking of remarkable civilizations, I'd also recommend Meet the Romans. This three-part series talks about the daily life in the Roman Empire and how the commoners and the nobility spent their days during the zenith of the Eternal City. Again, you can get a free month-long trial to enjoy these documentaries. It would also help support the channel. Back to the video. After the death of Aurangzeb Alamgir, there were three sons who were serious contenders for the peacock throne. In traditional Mughal fashion, they picked up the sword and went to war. This war of succession was much smaller in scale than the one Aurangzeb had fought against his brothers, primarily because his sons simply didn't have the same kind of clout and military support that Aurangzeb and his brothers had had. Out of the three sons, Prince Muazzam came out on top after defeating his brothers, Azam and Gambakhsh, to claim the throne. He took the title of Shahanshah Bahadur Shah and ascended to the throne in 1707. He is also known by the title of Shah Alam, the ruler of the world. However, immediately it was obvious that he was no Aurangzeb, partly because Aurangzeb himself had made sure of it. None of the princes had powerful households like Aurangzeb and the Mughals before him did. They relied more on the nobles than the previous Mughals, so the nobles negotiated the distribution of power with them. One example of this is that Zulfikar Khan, one of Aurangzeb's most capable commanders, offered his military backing to the emperor if he was appointed Mir Bakhshi, or commander-in-chief. So the emperor was already losing the tug of war between himself and his vassals. The emperor was around 64 or 65 years of age when he came to power, and so he was already considerably older than the previous Mughals. So everyone was sure that he might die any second. As a result, his sons refused to be appointed to faraway provinces because if they did so, they'd be in a weaker position to claim the throne than their brothers who remained closer to the court. This further weakened the next generation. To legitimize his rule, Bahadur Shah claimed descent from the Prophet Muhammad and started calling himself Sayyid. Apparently, his maternal grandfather was a Sayyid, according to some sources. He also started having the name of Ali, the Prophet's cousin and son-in-law, announced in the Friday sermon. Ali was technically also his ancestor, so by extension, he had the better right to rule. It was kind of a thin claim, to be honest, but it really didn't matter because Shahanshah Sayyid Qutbuddin Muhammad Shah Alam Bahadur Shah died in 1712 after only 5 years as emperor. His name is longer than his reign was. Due to the plethora of problems he faced, he actually had just given up in the last 6 months of his reign and spent most of his time gardening. Moving on, Zulfikar Khan, who controlled the military, installed Bahadur Shah's son Jahandar on the throne. Jahandar was inexperienced, and that's exactly why he was chosen. He would make a more controllable puppet. However, Jahandar's more experienced brother, Azimushan, had a problem with this. Zulfikar Khan assembled Jahandar and his other inexperienced brothers against Azim Shan and defeated him. Then he turned on the other inexperienced brothers, and with no one to challenge him, he secured Jahandar on the peacock throne. Since he was powerful and wanted more power, he executed the nobles who had supported the other claimants. This was the first time that this was done. Usually, the nobles were forgiven and reintegrated into the imperial machinery, but not this time. From this point on, the Mughal emperors would be inexperienced princes who had spent their entire lives in the comfort of the harem. A total break from the older days of the empire when princes went out, led armies, governed provinces, and fought for their claims. Now, the tug of war was no longer between the various princes and the vassals. Now, it was merely between vassals. The princes, and later the emperors, were totally, completely out of the equation. This became obvious when in 1712, the same year as Bahadur Shah's death and Jahandar's ascension, a rebel army from Bihar went up the Ganges River and attacked Agra. The army was led in the name of Farukh Siyar, the son of the deceased Prince Azim Shan. However, the real power behind Farukh Siyar were the Sayyid brothers, two Indian Muslims who were governors of Allahabad and Bihar. They had initially supported Azim Shan, but after his death, they supported his son. After taking Agra, Farukh Siyar and the Sayyid brothers moved on Delhi, where due to instability, the imperial treasury was empty, and so the army had not been paid in almost a year. The soldiers refused to fight without being paid. To pay them, Zulfikar Khan even ordered the gold from the palace's decorations to be stripped off, but that was simply not enough. The small and hastily assembled army was quickly defeated by Farukh Siyar and Delhi was taken. Both Jahandar and Zulfikar Khan were executed. Farukh Siyar was crowned as emperor and the Sayyid brothers were put in two of the empire's highest positions, vizier and paymaster general. This coronation makes an important shift in the Mughal empire. Up to this point, the largest percentage of the Mughal court was made up of Hindu Indians and Muslim Turco-Iranian Mongols. Indian Muslims made a very small portion of the court, but now, with the Sayyid brothers being Indian Muslims, this was changing. A power struggle ensued between the Muslims of Turkic, Iranian, or Mongol descent and the Muslims of Indian descent. Things got so bad and violent that Sayyid Abdullah Khan, the vizier, had to travel around Delhi with an army of 4,000 guards. Farukh Siyar was fully aware of his limited power and wanted to do whatever he could to get rid of the Sayyid brothers. However, while he wasn't successful in overthrowing them, he was more than successful in pissing them off. On one occasion, the emperor sent one of the Sayyid brothers, Hussein Ali Khan, to fight a rebellious Rajput leader. But he sent a message to the Rajput leader that if he killed Hussein, he would pay him. He sent similar messages to the Marathas in the Deccan. However, all parties just ignored the emperor and went on fighting and making deals. In 1718, the Sayyids decided that they had had enough and led an army towards Delhi made up in large numbers of the Maratha and the Rajput. Farukh Siyar was deposed, blinded, and executed a few months later in 1719. Within the same year, the empire went through two more emperors, Rafiul Darjat and Rafiul Dola, both of whom were sick and died within a few weeks of each other. Finally, another grandson of Bahadur Shah named Muhammad Shah was put on the peacock throne. He'd be the last Mughal emperor to sit on the peacock throne. Although he wasn't completely incapable and he was actually a decent ruler, his first move was to find and exploit any weakness the Sayyid brothers had. He got the older Turco-Iranian Mongol elites to help him. The Turco-Iranian Mongol elites, you know what, let's just call them Khanzads as they were called back then. The Khanzads organized behind a leader who came to be known as Nizam al-Mulk. Nizam assassinated Sayyid Hussein Ali Khan and then defeated Sayyid Abdullah Khan when he led an army against them. By 1721, the Sayyid brothers were dead. The next year, Nizam al-Mulk was invited to Delhi and appointed vizier. Nizam al-Mulk was a loyal member of Aurangzeb's court and was still very loyal to the Mughals. He understood the problem that the empire was facing and proposed laws to fix them. He wanted to reduce corruption by the increasingly powerful landholders. He wanted to reduce the power of the vassals by moving them around, but all of that was left on the table because other forces at the court stopped him. After trying for a year to reform the empire, Nizamul Mulk just left the capital in 1723 for what he called a change of air and went to the Deccan, a region he had spent a long time in during his service for Aurangzeb. He defeated the local rebels and established power there. For his services, he was given the title of Asif Jah by the emperor. Although he never claimed to be independent, he was in all but name. In 1763, he moved his capital to Hyderabad, where he founded a dynasty called the Asif Jahi. His descendants would simply be known as the Nizams of Hyderabad and would continue ruling till 1948. The Nizam Shahi can be considered the first Mughal successor state. The second Mughal successor state was formed in Bengal. There, another one of Aurangzeb's trusted courtiers was building power. He was named Kartalab Khan, and he had actually been a Brahmin slave who had risen through the ranks and had been appointed governor of Bengal by Aurangzeb. There, he performed something of an economic miracle and reformed the state into the Mughal Empire's most profitable province. For this, he was given the title of Murshid Quli Khan by Aurangzeb. There's even a city named after him in West Bengal called Murshidabad. He too continued to recognize the emperor's authority till his death. His successor, unlike those of Nizamul Mulk, did not recognize the emperor's authority though. Similar situations appeared in Awadh and Punjab, where local governors gained independence in all but name. Punjab was of special interest because it was the scene of a vigorous war between the Mughals and the increasingly militarizing Sikhs who fought valiantly against the oppressive Mughal governors there. The region around the former capital of Agra was taken over by the rebellious Jats, who began raiding and looting everything from towns to caravans. To summarize, by 1730, the empire's richest provinces were out of its control. There were various rebellions and the empire was all but bankrupt. Power from beyond the borders were circling to pick up the lost pieces of the Mughal Empire. To the south, the threat Aurangzeb had failed to end had come back in a big way. The Marathas had struggled, but during Aurangzeb's last years, they had bounced back. Aurangzeb had captured a pretender to the Maratha throne named Shahu, who was raised in a fully Persianized Mughal court. After Aurangzeb's death in 1707, he was released with the hopes that he would destabilize the Maratha state, but he was able to overthrow his aunt and take the Maratha throne. Then, in 1713, he appointed a man named Balaji Vishwanath as his Peshwa, a Persian term meaning something close to a prime minister. Balaji was a gifted politician and managed to make deals with the Sayyid brothers to collect taxes in the Deccan, making them the only power other than the Nizam in the Deccan. Then, after his death in 1720, his son Bajirao was appointed as Peshwa. As gifted as his father was in politics, Bajirao was in warfare. Marathas began raiding into North India, which got more and more bold and violent, eventually reaching the gates of Delhi in 1737. By 1739, the Mughals recognized that everything south of the Chambal River belonged to the Marathas, putting Mughal border merely 45 kilometers south of their former capital of Agra. The same year, in 1739, Delhi was sacked by the Iranian warlord, commonly known as Nader Shah. He ravaged everything between Delhi and Afghanistan before entering and sacking the Mughal capital. He looted everything and even took the great peacock throne itself. The Mughals weren't able to do anything. The weakness of the Mughals was now apparent to everyone on the Indian subcontinent, from the Marathas to the Europeans. Bajirao, however, it seems, actually wanted to preserve the Mughal state. He tried to rally all North Indian powers to form a confederation to protect the Mughal Empire from foreign threats. Although their generals slowly kept chipping away pieces of the Mughal Empire. There were many reasons behind this, but the most important one was probably that the Marathas weren't an empire, they were a confederation. The members of the confederation paid a quarter of their revenue to the Marathas, who protected them. A nominal Mughal presence in North India would, I guess, at least save the Marathas some hassle of governing that region. A similar deal to the rest of the confederation members was extended to the Mughals, whose administrative machinery was used by the Marathas to collect taxes in former Mughal territories. By 1760, the Marathas controlled almost the entirety of North India, all the way to the borders of Afghanistan. This also brought them in conflict with Ahmad Shah Durrani, the ruler of Afghanistan. The Durranis were raiding Punjab regularly. The Marathas fought with them in one of India's largest battles at Panipat in 1761, which the Marathas lost. This kept them south of Punjab, which was now being controlled by tribes of the Sikhs known as Misals. They kept things together and eventually formed a great empire in Punjab. Whatever the case, from Aurangzeb's death in 1707 to Nader Shah's sack of Delhi in 1739, the Mughal authority had deteriorated and was eventually limited to the walls of the Red Fort by the Marathas. The Mughals would never be able to exercise control in India ever again. However, even in 1857, the name of the Mughals summoned enough respect that the last Mughal emperor was selected as the head of the Great Indian Mutiny. For roughly the 120 years between the sack of Delhi and the fall of Delhi in the Great Indian Mutiny, the Mughal emperors were weak puppets. At this point, the story of India must be told through other perspectives. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.